not healthy. It's not a healthy thing. And this country hasn't come that far. All that I have said is that we are probably the last of the old guard. Whether we can really hold the line for 4 years, we're having a hell of a time when he's presented and making these changes. Christ, nobody wants to leave. And why? And about whether we keep the Cadillac or another bump and all that kind of thing. And if they do, we have forgiveness. But that's all right. That's all right. They're a nice bunch of folks. But my point is, in trying to get competent people in government who will come in determined to do everything that is necessary, unpopular, or in order to be, try to get the goddamn country turned around, it is hard. It really is. Because most people want to be loved. Frankly, and I say this as one who is a great defender, but frankly, the problem Bill has had, Bill Rogers, the problem he has with the State Department, he would not know this. And it's a tragedy because Bill's problem is that is, he passionately wants people, the press, and work for him, to like him, which was Johnson's problem too. By wanting them to like him, he thereby loses their respect. Because when you play down, rather than making them play up, that's the inevitable result. Now, it doesn't mean that you treat cruelly everybody below. Then you're just a crass son of a bitch who doesn't care. But I must say, the real problem that we have with every appointee we make, is you've got to have that value judgment. Is he or she, when he gets to that job, going to be thinking, how am I going to be thought of in the department? Are they going to have my pictures on the wall? Are they going to be glad I was here? Am I going to get a nice little profile on the New York Times man of the day or all that? The moment they worry about that, they're going to be a lousy cabinet officer or a lousy administration personnel. You agree?
Would you say that in addition to courage, however, it also takes conviction? You've got to know, and I think that's sort of a blessing, what it is you stand for. What it is you
stand for. Yes, both, but conviction required brains, then, too. Because courage, we have lots of people with, we have plenty of people, say, here, with courage and loyalty. And they would do anything. I really mean anything. I can show.
As we want into the camp.
That's right. And I admire that. And you need a few people that are willing to do that. But on the other hand, in government, you need courage. And you need also, you use the word conviction. But conviction is something I would describe as being not a prejudice, but it means believing in something and knowing why you believe in something. Mm-hmm. And that's the point. And there's the weakness of so many people.
And knowing that
we have people who are loyal and the people who are courage, but when it comes to conviction, making that extra step of having the ability and the depth to believe in something very deeply and know why, they won't sit in their ass and find out. You know, or they may never have been able to develop. And then once you get that, then you can stand up like a rock against them. Let me give you an example on the court. Take Rehnquist. We appointed Rehnquist to the court. Oh, Christ, he's never been a judge. And he's young. He's just been in the Office of Legal Counsel. He's just an Arizona lawyer. Oh, yes, just dispersed his class at Stanford, but not realized in Carter and so forth and so on. So Rehnquist went down because of the times and so forth, the times that we appointed, they had to approve him. On the court, as of the present time, Berger tells us that Rehnquist is by far the most valuable man. First, because of his youth, he can do double work of anybody else. Second, all of our appointees are conservative, but Rehnquist is younger than Powell. Powell's a little old Blackman. He's smarter than Blackman, of course. And Berger, well, Berger wouldn't say it. He's probably smarter than Berger. He's not a good politician, but smarter. So when they have their Friday conferences, the brilliant man on the other side is still a little asshole, Bill Douglas. Whatever you want to say about Douglas, he's smart as hell. But Rehnquist sits there and cuts him to pieces every Friday, just like that. So there you've got the combination of loyalty, courage, conviction, knowing why. The left is the bashful thing for intelligent people to be for, and only the dummies are basically people that wear flags and their lapels, although I can tell you with George Meade, you can give cards and spades to every goddamn businessman I've ever had in his office and demolish him in any kind of debate. Because he's smarter than they are. If he had the education, he'd probably be president or pope.
How do you see spiritual and philosophic values relating in our farm?
How do they relate? Well, they, getting that, the main place, the main part there is that the individual who makes the decision has to understand. As far as getting other people to understand, it's damn impossible. Impossible because in a free society, free philosophy, so-called, with all this business, you know, about diversity and so forth and so on. Everybody's supposed to be able to, you know, disagree and so forth and so on. And when you've got, in this whole foreign policy field, it's war. And there you can believe, you must have courage, you've got to follow the orders, you've got to kick the other people in the nuts. And don't ask the reason why. It would help if they understood. There again, though, if you're giving youth, we probably have more than we think, too. I don't want to sound insecure. The problem with our side is that the bright guys that we do in college, the ones that are oriented toward conservatism and or Republican, particularly conservatism, the Democrat Republican, go into business, therefore the private sector. The bright guys on their side go into government for the purpose of destroying business, or into the media for the purpose of destroying business. Now, the other thing is that what we have to do is to get right guys on our side with the right convictions. I mean, the right moral values, the right religious values, the right philosophical values, but with brains and loyalty to come into government and say, God damn it, I'm going to come in, I'm going to fight those bastards and lead them. That's what we need. And there's one weakness, incidentally. One weakness. That weakness is very great. Despite all the talk out there, willing to sacrifice and so forth. When it comes to what I would call character, deepest sense, and that means seeing what they first the left is totally obsessed with power for the sake of power. To them, people are not individuals. They are masses to be manipulated. And the government will tell them how they are to do, whereas we look at people as individuals. But being power mad, power obsessed, they respect it and fear it. And their weakness is that they lack character, and when the chips are really down, they lack guts. I'm never afraid of a leftist. Let me explain the kind of leftist. The American. The liberal leftist. The communist left is a different thing. God damn it, he's a true believer. He's a true believer, and he'll fight, die, sacrifice, and everything else. But the American leftist is basically the worst of both worlds. The communist, I mean, like a Brezhnev, has nothing but contempt for the man's people and the governments and things. He knows they're not strong. And he had great fear of me, interestingly enough. But you see, they also know that I will do exactly the same that they'll do, if necessary. I mean, in other words, we're out to win. You see, it's a strange thing, this sentimental, mushy idealism of the left, which is purely a facade, brings nothing but contempt from both the right and the far left. The real left and the real right have contempt for them. Now, the real right's no asset to us. They're just too goddamn dumb to ever be flexible enough to getting it done. The far left is our enemy. And here, however, at the instruments of power, you've got this flabby left, liberal left. I mean, basically what it is, the limousine lips, they are the greatest danger in America today. Far greater than the far left, far greater than the far right. And the reason is that they've got no goddamn character. And that includes the businessmen, it includes the media people, it includes professors. Not a bit of character in the whole damn bunch. I have seen. I've seen the Ivy League presidents in here, and I thought a flabby, soft bunch of bastards they were.
If we, the United States, the Americans, are the only nation left that has at this point in time the philosophical strength to hold up against communism, against the Chinese leadership, against the Soviet leadership, it's terribly important. People in foreign countries sense that about us because what they see is transmitted to them in large part by our media. They see our firmness,
yeah,
uncertainty,
that's
and
right.
That sort of thing. And they very they worry about whether we're stable. And that goes to this question that I talked about a moment ago. When you link the constant portrayal of our media and their media showing us as uncertain and fermenting
right.
and ruthless and our values are
sick.
And at the same time, we structure a much tighter formal relationship with communism. They say, well, everything is going in that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
If we could come up with some way to show what our root philosophical values are and how determined we are that they survive, I think it would perform a very useful function. It's a difficult problem in public relations,
sure.
But it's very important.
And a good mission creates,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a good mission, however, for a philosopher, too.
But it eventually, it has to be effective.
Well, it's a problem, Jim, that we have, let's face it, you were running the speech game. You know, I always try to say, God damn, say something. It just can't be that nice, flabby, clever, elegant. Well, at least we survived. That's about all we can say.
We survived pretty well.
Yes, we hope you have. Oh, God, too. We'll count on you. I tell you, though, Bob, and Jim, you watch for this, too. I think
Thank you.
But he had a good excuse, which is the guy's a pain in the ass to have.
So he said.
Yeah. And he's wrong. It's the same reason you didn't have him in, same reason that, you know, you just, it's difficult. Yeah, I did. And she comes out, she talked to Ron also.
Oh, I have, she runs over the town. That little child is something to believe.
And
I have to practically beat others in the head to get them to go do things. Julie, I say it, she's thought way ahead.
What Julie said was, we talked about what I think she could do here, and I think she could. But what she said was that she felt the place she could make the real contribution is in running the East Wing. I told her I agree. Pardon?
She knows that now.
I told her I agree. She said that's what she really felt she ought to do. And then, you know, we talked over and she said, is there anything else? And I said, yes, there is. In this area, the whole area of planning, looking for the little things and the big things that fit in so that we make our, what we do, look right to the people outside. Not the substance, not determining what position you take on an issue, but determining what the president does, what the rest of the family does, what all the White House people do, and what they're perceived as doing. And we have some people working on that. We have Dick Moore. We had Chapin. We have, from on the fringes, the garments and the sapphires and the people that kind of look at it from that way. We have Tex McCrary that we bring in from outside to look at it from outside. The problem is you need somebody who understands what's doable rather than just what's desirable, but has the sense to see both and to sit and work with those people in developing plans, ideas, reviewing the schedule, reviewing the thing, reviewing the question of, you know, is it what the president ought to do, but more importantly, maybe what other people ought to do, and how you work those in, what's being done, what our objectives are, what impression we're trying to create, and that we're going to have a real goal in that with Dwight Leaving, and that's a hole that she uniquely, in my view, could fill on a day-to-day basis, working with those people, working with Parker on the schedule planning, which she would like, she apparently likes to work with. She said, well, how would I do that? And I said, you'd have to have an office, you'd have to come in, you'd have to go to work in the morning, you'd have to meet with these people as the day goes on, you'd have to spend time with me, you'd have to spend some time with your father from time to time. You could look at the overall, how the East Wing ties in, what your mother's schedule is, and how that all works. The idea of where we can better use cabinet officers, how we can look a little more human, which is more important now, because we haven't done well enough in that. Mainly because most of us really don't see the things there that you would see. And, you know, I went through all that. And she said, yeah, that's very interesting. That's something I think I could do and I would like to do. But then she came back and said, but I think where I can do more, and uniquely so maybe, is over in the East Wing. And I said, well, if you do that, you could do this to a degree also. They don't, one doesn't rule out the other by any means. In fact, they should be tied together because this whole place should be working as one. Then she said, well, the point that Ron said she shouldn't be hurting the press around and all that. I said, absolutely not. You shouldn't be. But the role you should be in over there is assistant to the First Lady in the same way that I'm assistant to the President. I don't hurt the press around. I never even see the press. But I have a very direct responsibility for what we do with the press and how we handle it. And on the other hand, you can be a front personality too. And Ziegler talked to her a little about this. He said, for instance, if you shouldn't herd the press around, you shouldn't have briefings, and you shouldn't have to handle their daily requests. But let's say there's going to be a dinner at the White House tonight. Might be a hell of a thing for you to have a little thing with the television cameras there, where you stand in the Grand Hall this afternoon, and say at the dinner tonight, after the President and Mrs. Nixon come down with so-and-so down the stairway and go in here, then our entertainment, we're going to have Fred Waring, who's going to be seeing some numbers. You take the people a little bit through the party. They make a hell of a thing that you can do that no press secretary could ever do. No Ron Ziegler could do it, and no Connie Stewart could do it. But Julie Eisenhower, the daughter of the house, who is in charge of the thing, can do it.
And Ron's very excited about the thing. See, when he talked to Pat, what he said to her was, he thought you probably had to keep Connie, you know, because we don't have anybody else on the scene, and you need somebody.
Yeah.
He said, I think you ought to keep her, but we ought to be looking for a replacement. Well, nobody, none of us in our wild dreams ever thought of Julie.
I'll correct that.
Said, what do I do with this? rescheduling any of those. Now, if you see what we're doing, we should, what we're doing on those is referring over to the family for their, you know, something that's a high-level thing like that, to see if one of them can receive them and take them.
The power that shows by the public, asking from her. I didn't ask her about it, and I guess I predicted the letter, and then I saw what it was, that ended. Such nice people, I said, oh, for Christ's sake, I should have seen them, I was available. But I don't know.
The problem is.
Yeah, so I came back, read the letter, and Rosie said, you know, I had been driving 2 weeks to get them in here, and I couldn't break through.
Oh, bullshit.
So, you know what I mean?
She made one check 2 weeks ago, and then didn't tell anybody they were coming. They've got scheduled over there. Dave didn't know that the people were here. And he said, if I'd known they were in town, he said, he takes the blame. He said, it was my fault. I should have known that this is fixing the schedule. I should have realized that, but I didn't. But that's, you know, we shouldn't be playing that kind of game. That's why, goddamn, if we can get Julie in. Yeah, but she does. And that, you know, we can't do anything about that.
So the thing is, well, look.
She
kind of like, should never take any joy out of a statement.
Kind of rather make the point that she couldn't get through than to have gotten through. She can get through. Hell, she's never mentioned it to me. And she does mention to me all kinds of things like that when she thinks they're important. And she's usually right. She has damn good judgment on that stuff. She knows that you ought to see someone like that. Or, you know, that old man from your law firm or something like that. There's certain things like that that you love to do.
Anybody has to do it. Or he likes to do it.
Or it isn't likely to do it. It's that you know that you should do it.
I like to. I never mind. Anything I have to do, I like to do. I never worry about it. But anyway, you got to get a hold of it so that I can have the time to do a little thinking. I can give some leadership. And that's why I'm not going to get involved in rushing around to the various agencies, get some people in the ass. And so I will have people in if I can give them some leadership and talk to them a bit. That's why we can.
You've got control of your schedule. We're at a point.
We've also got to get control of the administration so that I can talk to people in confidence and get them charged up and so forth and so on.
Well,
get control of Bush.
To the extent that you're willing to, the more time you'll spend talking to people in the administration for a while, the more mileage you'll gain. Because every one of them, if you get into this stuff, not into their problems, that's the thing. We've got to get it so that they do their operating problems with
so they don't come in positive. So they don't come in the way Roby and Harden and
with the goddamn agenda,
with the whole damn list of little picky things. Just come in and talk about it. Like Roby should come in and talk about how things in Massachusetts.
Well, and the general
philosophy.
The philosophy, even of his own department, just, you know, Mr. President, I'm pushing very hard now to loosen these trust funds up. I don't want to get into the specifics, but am I on the right track on this? Do we want to bust this?
Then he can go back and charge up his whole team with what I've said. I want to be sure to see those appointments we're going to make. I've done enough of the nepotism stuff now. I've done, you know, the Whitaker one and the other. That's really come down now to people that, I mean, I just got to get some new faces, young, some women. Damn, I don't know whether can we make a woman an undersecretary or anybody. Incidentally, does Dave want that damn job over there or not? And if he doesn't, can we give it?
We're supposed to be here today.
Huh?
No, tomorrow. I will give it to the woman if he doesn't want it.
No, that's what I was thinking.
She'd be all right for it. So we do it.
Well, I understood it. No, it was all right. The other thing is, could you make a slight check for Schlesinger?
He's asking back now whether you had said, you know, you wanted to meet with him about that memo that he was writing after he had written about what he wanted to do with the CIA. Now, you had Eric go over that memo, take a look at it. You probably should do that. I mean, you're sending a guy in there. He better
have
a picture of what you want done.
I do want it. I've got to tell him because he's a straight line guy like me.
Or like Colson. You know, if you tell him to cut it by 75%, you'll find it cut 75% by
the end of it. I know, it's a question of just getting in the right direction
before it goes up.
But with the way we all have to handle Spence and others, as I said, we've got the big three, it's all of you and the other, and I'm gonna get back to that party and Kevin thing. The more I think about it, I think if you, since we've gone down the road for the three, you may as well add the other two. But from now on, I would suggest, let's just understand that when we do have to have somebody, let's not say even the early one has to come every time. You don't give it to him, thank God.
Sure tells them.
And Kissinger does, but he comes to enough.
Well, this one, if you're putting the new cabinet in it, Ehrlichman should be at this one. And he's damn important. It's a real problem. Ehrlichman's not going to be at the dinner, as a matter of fact, because he's got a family thing that night.
Right.
But he's going to come over before dinner and mingle around, and people will think he's there, and he's going to disappear when we go into dinner. Nobody will ever know he's not there.
Could we invite the others to do the same thing? No.
Not really.
Oh, invited them. Invited them. Don't let them. Remember, don't get me in any trouble with my other people. If it was a Zegler attendance or two.
Yeah, and there's some reason for both of them operationally. That,
okay.
You can make the case for those. And you can
I think we're going to have to, frankly, handle the planning.
Ziegler, incidentally, was not asking to come to that dinner. Timmons was, because Timmons is concerned about his perceived position in the White House, and he's got a reason to be.
I didn't think Ziegler gave a damn, obviously.
He doesn't.
He doesn't. He can come to anything, you know, but. Good. God. We'll work it all out. Staff members are treated just like. And I think everybody will be happy. That way you can bring in a lower people, you know, up all of them down the line. Bring them to a dinner where it'll mean something to them.
Well, that's my view. Is
yeah, then everybody eats and everything else.
Keep
I don't know how every otherwise feel, but after Pat and I have been here 4 years of Vice President, we were delighted not to come to the White House. We could possibly go ahead and got there or always had to come. But you know, we've been to a
It's a mixed thing. It's the dinners with you we don't need. We do need to do more. We do need to develop a little social and cultural life
for our
people. This is partly my fault because I hate all that crap. But I should take some leadership in that.
That's right.
And
for what can you use these places?
I think we've got to use the facilities. We've got all kinds of places, for Christ's sake.
We've got Blair House.
We've got Blair House. We've got that place across the street there. We've got that.
Nice.
Yeah, and there's a portrait gallery. There are all kinds of nooks and crannies around this town that nobody knows about, that you can have unusual kinds of parties and you can do interesting kinds of things. And we can have these lectures and see, this cultural stuff is damn interesting. We're making a mistake now. For all of our wives. It's a monumental problem for all of us, and I know, you know, it's a pain in the ass to hear about it, but it really is.
I haven't
realized until just recently how rough it really has been, and I've sneered at the other people, and I've had a worse problem of my own than not knowing. This is a terrible town to raise kids in, and it's a terrible town to live in for people like us who don't like this kind of stuff. It's a marvelous town for people like Bill Sapphire and his wife, who are beautiful people and just love this shit. But for the Ehrlichmans and the Hollivans and the
our kind of people,
Weinbergers and the Schultzes, and Obie Schultz hates all this crap. Hates it as much as I do. But Obie Schultz, they all have a starving for companionship and belonging and uplift and all that. And the way to do that is to get these lectures. Now, there's another thing.
Go your own.
My wife raised with Lucy and got nowhere with, but it's a hell of an idea that Julie could put into motion, and that is take the staff wives and maybe the cabinet wives, but I don't think so. I think the staff wives.
Make them surrogates.
And make them surrogates at White House functions. When Pat Nixon has 500 people in for tea in an afternoon, and they go through the receiving line, you ought to have a bunch of our wives, not in the formal sense, but in a working sense. And that's what they want. They don't want to be guests. They don't want to be, go through the line. Have one of them or four of them stand in the red room and give little lectures about the red room. And have four more in the green room for lectures in my back.
That makes people, they want to help.
Which
they don't want to just sit there.
Yes,
they want to help.
They want to work.
Absolutely.
They want a job.
Another thing we can do is this. We cannot do, Pat doesn't need to do every one of these things. You know, we get big receptions, you know, over there where she may not even be there. Let the White House.
Let them come on a tour, but let the White House wives be over there to explain.
White House wives can be over there to explain it.
To the Republican Women's Committee of Ames, Iowa.
Right.
To meet Gene Ehrlichman.
That's right.
Almost as big a deal as meeting Pat Nixon.
That's right. That's right. Big deal.
It really is.
Big deal. They don't have to get the cabinet wives in on that.
And let them run, use them on tours over here when you're out of the place.
Absolutely.
Let them run, like my wife ran an art museum thing in Los Angeles where they, you know, tours for children's groups and stuff.
Right.
They can run that stuff through here and tell the history of the cabinet room and this room and all. It's much nicer than having a White House guard with a pistol on his butt. Do it.
He's illiterate.
No, they're good. They aren't illiterate. Those guys do a damn good job. Yeah, they really do.
Right.
And it shouldn't downgrade it. But the point is, they're just a White House guard doing it.
Right.
If you get Gene Ehrlichman doing it, or O.B. Schultz doing it,
class.
That's a hell of a big thrill to the folks who get the tour. Now, these people, I'll tell you, these tour ops, we run, you know, we have to, when you get friends in from home and stuff,
yeah.
You have to run through a tour. And God, the letters we get back from those, they obviously, you're, and that's why I'm glad we're keeping Mike.
At least Pat.
They does a hell of a job.
Pat.
I'll tell you, we treat people very, very well here. And we have a feel through here of the awe of the White House.
Should we have that level of feeling? Should we start voting the congressmen and senators on a very selective basis between our Republican congressmen and senators for tours and our Democrats and supporters and screw the rest of them?
I think so.
On a special tour.
I think so. I think we should run out of tickets.
Huh?
I think we should run out of tickets when we get the people that.
I hate to have the groups discriminated against. We can pick the groups, but my point is, what the congressman's office can get the groups separate in 9 days. Getting back to Julie, how did Julie
go? Well, she had to go over meet Congressman Steiger to receive a. She laughed. I said, you know, it's a problem of that Whittier thing. That I said, that's the kind of thing you would have caught. We would have, if you'd been around, we would have not blown something like that. And she laughed and she said, well, unfortunately, it's my turn today. I've got to go over to Congressman Steiger's presenting something, a goose or something. I don't know what it is. Something. But she had to go over and receive that. And that's fine. She's great at doing that. She should do that. And he's just as happy. All he has to do is get credit for presenting the damn thing to the White House. And you don't have to sit through all that.
I should have them all.
Never. And the Whittier people, I know you feel badly about it, and it was a mistake, but the Whittier people got a hell of a thrill, I'm sure. Coming to the White House, seeing Pat Nixon, going through the tour and presenting that thing. And don't...
Oh, I do.
We cannot downgrade what the other people do, what Pat Nixon does. And
we do a lot.
And you do a hell of a lot. But the less you do of that kind of stuff, the better. You just don't need to do very much of that. It's much better for you to sit and talk to Bob Nisbet for an hour than it is for you to receive half a dozen mayors with their Christmas boots.
Right. And I too, I know. It's better to give some leadership to these people.
And that's right, to sit and talk to Jim Schlesinger for an hour so that when he goes out, you'll aim him for 4 years. And he'll remake the CIA. You get Keogh aimed in the right direction in the USIA so that he doesn't. He wouldn't anyway, but, you know, so
he was a good choice. When I talk about the reprints, I don't mean to downgrade Whitaker, I understand. I just,
I know what you mean exactly.
I just had a sort of a feeling that, anyway, where's the saying in that department? Where the hell is the chicken's butt?
Well, you get a little saying in the Park Service with Ron Walker, I'll tell you. That's going to shake things up.
Did we do it?
Yeah. Whitaker went over with him, they got him set, so he's, you know, qualified. It doesn't, so because they don't think he's qualified. Who the hell can? Was Bobby Kennedy qualified to be Attorney General?
Sure. Well, I am glad we put the other guy out of there. He's against us.
I'm glad we...
You notice something on Meeker, though? I told Henry Meeker was over there. And I got another order on him here from Incidentally O'Neill, the Daily News, said that if you don't have a strong ambassador, you can't compliment the star.
Well, I raised that with him when we were in Romania, because I wondered about him then. Wasn't he, he's the guy in Romania?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he wasn't, you know, we had some problems in working with the government there and all. And he was, he shafted us. His interest was in putting himself out front, not in getting our work done.
I want that. Well,
Jacob Bean was a disaster. Okay. Jacob Bean's wife, I'll tell you, is another one.
Right.
Jacob Bean's wife is another one that's a real mess.
She's just a little weird. But he's a great retire.
I know.
You get Bean out. A lot of them will be ready to go at 60 years of age. That's, and this just don't make any.
Just.
Alex Johnson, you leave. God damn, that. I just
can't. Weird shit. That's
ridiculous for him to try to hang on. It's
not good.
I'm going to put some, I'm not going to take Henry's advice on the Russian thing. I have a little bit of a span in there.
Was Henry pushing Alex for Russians?
Yes, you know, but Henry's judgment on people's front.
But we pushed him, and the thing Henry raised was Saul, which you approved, and so but started that one.
Through. I know. We'll try that anymore.
Anything.
We don't take it.
Well, you can leave him as ambassador at large and let him go running around a
senator
or something, you know.
I don't mind him being ambassador.
He can't, he won't do any harm. He's trustworthy. He'll do what he's told.
Well, that would sign him.
And you can have him do special things, go to meetings, represent things. Do you want to put Shakespeare on active? Screw things up a little bit.
Yes, we have any invites. What do you want?
Well, we're trying to shake that thing up, you know, and in a second.
Yeah.
Be a pretty good signal as he goes out, that he goes out not in disgrace, but...
what do you want?
I hate to see those bastards win anything, you know, and if Shakespeare
right.
goes, they'll think they won something.
That's right. ACTA.
And ACTA is this place that would signal that he's, you're keeping him in... key area of foreign policy. He understands the Soviet threat. He'll be hardline. He'll cause a lot of trouble there, which is what you want, I think.
You mean you put him on the advisory?
Yeah.
Quite.
Yeah. If we're stuck with it.
Very good idea. We have to have it.
You don't want him on FIA because he gets a little dreary with that.
Huh?
Well, he's a little dreary for that group.
He just, he's too...
But he could screw up ACTA pretty nicely and keep things
yeah.
kind of...
Fires.
And he'll be opposed to all the disarmament stuff. It's not bad to have a guy.
But they don't like to talk a lot of that. They all talk.
I think he was right in not going on the USIA advisory group. I don't think he should put the former director.
Very good. I mean, I was crushed.
Oh, it was nice to offer.
I just kept, I don't know, maybe. I am really very discouraged as to what ability at all we're going to have to deal with anything. I mean, we sent mainly because we don't seem to have many offers from anybody that wants to really come in. And, you know, Christ, everybody's.
I think we do. I think we have a lot
more. I just don't know. I just don't know whether we've got it or not. Whether we're going to grab hold of this thing or anything.
But
I think what really disturbed me the most was the Bill Rogers attitude.
And then those.
You know what I mean?
But those are the people you're getting rid of, not the people you're bringing in.
Yeah, the bill will be here a while.
Well, that's too bad.
But you know, we've got one hell of a problem.
I tell you that while Bill's here a while, he sure tracks. I mean, when I said Bill, the Scally thing, he settled. Yes.
Says members of Congress, if I'm not incorrect.
No.
Why not give one to each of the celebrities that worked for him?
Okay.
And all the performers. Well, yeah. So, and I have work on this. I don't want to get the members of the Congress, you have a good idea, though.
You shouldn't give a gift.
I'm too sure I don't. It came anyway from tenancy through tenants and so forth. But he sure rose knows that he'd be a celebrity and then some friends or something, you know what I mean? What will attire be for the sparring answer that, shall we say, shall I say, what is it, what goes?
Yes, I said it's awesome. What goes, sparring answer?
What do you want to participate in a first round for your traditional $10, which you're going to be little by day errors? Jesus Christ, man.
Reporting it's encouraging in a way because obviously nobody's telling anybody anything, and these guys are wrong as hell.
They're all saying that we're close to the settlement. They're all wrong.
They're all wrong.
But they may be right.
They may be right.
You know what I mean? They may be right in the broad sense of a settlement is inevitable. They are wrong. The settlement is not inevitable right at this time. That's kind of my view.
I think that's true. I've been through all the intelligence that we've had since the 6th of October, the raw reports, and it's just inconceivable to me that Hanoi's going to be able to pick up and go on the way they're going, if they do want this. Because they've instructed all of their cadres, they reorganized their forces in the south, broken down into small units. Everyone's been briefed and oriented.
Yeah. So,
well, I think they're going to play on what they anticipate to be pre-Christmas anxiety on our part. And we keep the line open.
What I mean is, just let me say that I'm talking about Henry's long message and so forth now. There is nothing to be gained by a tortured examination of what went wrong, this and that and the other thing, you know what I mean? Just forget.
sort of got up from my thoughts issue.
Yes, sir, I sent that message to him and told him to use it, and he said...
Wise. You can't tell what is wise unless you're there, of course.
No, that's right.
He's got this sense of he'll know.
He was quite explicit in saying that the thing would be done amicably, which lessens the chance that they'll go public with an attack. Although they reacted quite sharply to achieve that.
What are they saying?
They said that this was an unreasonable demand. The United States was responsible for it. That Madam Bin did the same thing, except she said that she saw it implied that we shouldn't allow him to do this, trying to keep a split between us. But Hanoi was a little more direct in its attack on both Chu and ourselves as being a puppet of ours and an extension of our view, claiming that we really didn't want to settle and that they're building up with military supplies and civilians acting as military, tens of thousands, they say. And we don't really want peace, and we just want to continue to be in the Maldives. Which is fairly consistent with their approach at the table. You're making these same kinds of...
Now, what's your... Well, you really come down to the fundamental thing. First of all, Henry's got to get the talking to him on tomorrow and have it the way as possible.
That's right.
Then he will come back. After he comes back, then suddenly he will be... There'll be a letdown here. Everybody will think it was going to go. But that isn't working. I mean, we can take a letdown. I mean, you see, you mustn't think it's the end of the world because the talks don't succeed right now. And I hope that you left Henry in that frame of mind when he left, or is he... His hopes are pretty high on Saturday. He left, or he wouldn't...
They were high Saturday.
Because when you came back, you obviously...
And I must say, based on the session Saturday, it was just a question of whether we fought a compromise or folded or
right.
They did. But that was it.
And nothing happened.
They reopened the same issues we had hammered out Friday and Saturday so laboriously.
What in the hell do you think happened? Nothing in between, I don't know.
Well, we've done a hell of a lot of things that must be driving them up the wall in an objective sense. And Christ, we have put in $1 billion worth of equipment.
Come on, now then, though then, so we were disappointed, sir. Henry obviously got a hell of a letdown. Like you see, I can tell more about his reactions from this by reading 30 or 40 pages of why, you know, I mean, you can too. We all know what it is now. Reading these down and discouraged, he raised his hopes high. So now his hopes are dead. Now they're dashed. Well, they should have never been high, and they never should have been dashed, in my opinion. I think it's always about where it was. Am I wrong or not? If I am, then I'll start reading all this stuff.
No, I think you're exactly right, sir. I think this thing, we just got to... all the indications are that they want to settle, and I think they will settle. But they're communists, and every goddamn nickel they can make from us, they're going to try to get. And they don't mind if it takes 2 months, a month, a week. They're going to get the best deal they can get.
So how are we going to position Sigurd tomorrow to break up? Did Henry give any guidance on that?
Well, he claims that he has guidance in here. I think we should really say, and I'm sure his guidance will say this, that he's returned for consultation.
Well, and I'll be in the morning. I get an up call, you come in, we'll have a good talk about it.
Yes, sir.
You and I'll get Sigurd position. He's coming for consultation, but there's still some knotty issues to be made. I think, frankly, we ought to say we can't say we made progress if they're going to deny it. I mean, I don't know. It is true that there has been
progress. There has been progress, and I think we can
say we have made some progress, but there's still some knotty issues to be resolve, and we're trying to resolve them.
That's right.
She's come home for consultation. When will they really resume? Just as soon as we, both sides agree, they would serve a useful purpose. That's what I'd say, just like that. Get out of the room.
Exactly. And then when there's this.
Now, let me come to the key point. You really don't feel we should bomb again, don't you? You see, the real problem you got there is that if we do, the bastards could use that as an excuse for not talking. And if they might, I don't know.
No, sir, I'm afraid. Depending on what is really the cause of the hang-up, if it's this whole array of things, I think we should start reckoning. And recognizing it, it's going to be tough. But, we've taken a lot tougher than this. It's not going to be that tough.
No, the election is over. Forgetting the election and that sort of thing, sure. It's the Christmas season. People thought there were going to be facts, but we'll just say we're doing this because we want to get these negotiations going. But I don't know, what do we say? Why do we say we're bombing more? What's our...
Well, I think we have...
We're not going to say a damn thing. We're just going to start doing it. We'll say we use these or do it over that. And we'll say, well, there was a buildup. And then a buildup.
There was a buildup. There was build-up. The talks had gone on for an extended period beyond what we thought would be necessary. We can't risk dawdling tactics. We're prepared to stop it just as soon as we get a settlement. Of course, it's going to stop.
But then we must not stop bombing the North until we get a settlement.
Until we have it on the line.
Must not do it. Now that's the point of the state we made to stop this damn thing before we had a settlement out.
And we're going to get pressure from Bill Breeden. I am confident Henry's going to come back with some theories as to why we shouldn't do it. We have to consider that. He may know something we don't know, or he may get some assurances from late October that we don't know about. But, my own instincts are that they only understand one thing. And if they're going to try to play us right up to the congressional return, that would be even tougher to start again then. When these men are back in town. And we get into a weather problem. The B-52s are great around the clock, sir, but they need escorts, and the escorts are weather sensitive. So while it's technically feasible, it's not the kind of thing you can do without some kind of reasonable weather. As I sat down inside a war game, she was calling for a ceasefire. There have habitually been holiday ceasefires, and we're going to have to wrestle with that one. How to manage that problem. And I think that's, quite frankly, what Hanoi is very conscious of. They don't want us to start bombing. They realize now that they've got a gap that can...
What is a ceasefire run?
Well, he offered, ordinarily they run at Christmas, midnight the day before Christmas, to midnight the day following Christmas. And they have another one at New Year's. There have been occasions when they've had them longer. They've run right through the period. Hsu offered that today. But that was in conjunction with this POW exchange. That was a red herring to take the heat off of him and show his magnanimous spirit. Now we may have to send the vice president out to brutalize this guy.
About what? I mean, even before we have a settlement?
Yes,
what was he talking about?
By God, we want you to know we're going, and Are you gonna persist in this, that it's gonna be your destruction? We've got to take military action, we've got to concert on that to get maximum pressure on Hanoi. Well, I think we have to think about this. Maybe I should do that, I don't know, but I think two right now are so far off the reservation that it's gonna take some more tending.
I agree. Maybe you have to do that. Maybe using the vice president for that is...
Maybe premature.
But Hugh's got to be told in the coldest possible terms, why the hell has he paid any attention to this stuff? Well, it's hard. We always knew it was going to be hard. It's just a little harder than we expected. What happened is that Henry got his hopes up a little higher than he should have for the election.
That's right. That's
I never thought, I didn't, as you know, have very high hopes, and I don't think he did.
You never had, but I never had.
Huh? Did you?
I never had.
Really? I never did. I remember Henry came in, remember, said, well, we've got three over there. The next morning he cooled off a little, you know, the little bit was over. What the hell? You got nothing but a slap in the face from Hugh. You went out there, right? But you know there comes a time when it must end. That was really the theme of Buckner's column, wasn't it? Yeah. So I understood what
you said. Well, we've backed this guy, and we've given him everything, and it's time for him to stand up and face it.
That's right. Well, we really have now. Even Abrams, with it, it's just sort of like a sodden rock. Never says anything, but even he said on one occasion that I can recall, he said, well, we've got to cut him loose and see what he can do when the time has come. Depending on us too long.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Isn't that really it?
Yes, sir. And I agree with that completely. We're just going to have to manage that one through. But I think we're in a hell of a lot stronger position than they are, sir. I really do.
And the North?
I think we're in great shape.
Why?
We're going to stay confident.
Why are we in a better position?
Because they're hurting very badly in the South. They're,
God damn it, we just got the bombing going again.
That's right, they can't face that.
That's why if they're being amicable, the reason they're being amicable is because they're the bombing. I don't think there's any other damn reason at all. I want you to get that across to, I just tell Henry that I do not want him to do anything that will limit my option, very clear option, to resume intensive bombing of the North. And that you know, in a sense, that's really better than having that option open than to have than to pay a price to have him say something pleasant as he leaves. Because something pleasant as he leaves is sort of... So the press is going to say, well, the talks haven't succeeded so far. Oh, the press is going to be very clear. The press sees this is moving toward a settlement. Or would you agree?
No, I think they do. I think they sense this. They sense it from Moscow, Peking, and the situation.